Hi, I'm Terry, Instagram's sassy sober mum. Welcome to my podcast, Sober Stories from Everyday People. Bringing you stories from people just like you and I, the aim of this podcast is to share our experiences with drinking and how we got and stayed successfully sober. You can now access most of my coaching and guidance through my Thrive Sober online video course. This is an easy to follow course containing 50 videos with backed up writing and recommendations that can be worked through in your own time. There is a brilliant app that you can download to access the course on your phone or your tablet. You can skip through the course choosing content you most need in that moment, or you can work through them from 1 to 50 in order. You can come back to the learning or redo sections to help with parts of emotional sobriety that you are struggling with. The course covers holidays, summertime, Christmas, socializing, what to read, identifying and coping with triggers, complacency, the 100-day moderation trap, breaking down old beliefs, managing your thoughts, sugar cravings, and plenty more. You will also get a free copy of my Thrive Sober ebook in the introduction section. Visit www.thrivesobercoaching.com/course to learn more or get access. Use coupon code HALFPRICE to get 50% off. I've had so many messages from people that say the ebook and the course together has been the thing to get them over the line and achieving their first 100 days successfully sober. Hello and welcome to Sober Stories from Everyday People. Today I'm going to be talking to Gareth, and he's from Hollyport, which is near Windsor in Berkshire. And he's been sober for 129 days, which is fabulous, Gareth. Well done, and thank you for coming on my show.
Lovely to meet you.
Yeah, really nice to meet you. So why don't you tell us a bit about you so we can get to know you, and then we'll jump into your story.
Yeah, sure. So as you say, my name's Gareth. I'm 38 years old. I live in a little village in Berkshire with my partner. We've just bought a house about 6 months ago with our two little dogs, Otis and Isla. I work in sales as a country manager. I look after the UK and Ireland for a company. I like to read. I like to be outdoors and very active sort of person in nature and so on. That's me, I guess. I really know what to say.
It's quite funny when you said there, yeah, I'm a country manager in sales. I was like, this reminds me of my old life. I used to be, you know, that kind of thing, and just working in kind of big corporate sales, quite high pressure. Is it a quarterly thing for you? Is it always like quarterly targets? And
yeah, exactly that. It's you're only as good as your last month, and that kind of thing. I mean, being the country manager as well, it's not just the sales, it's everything else side, you know, the admin, the customer service and so on. But it keeps me busy, and I like to travel. And obviously, as we discussed with my recent diagnosis with ADHD, I'm always on the go anyway. So, you know, I like to be here, there and everywhere. So it works quite well for me. I've been doing it so long, I don't know what else I'd do.
Yeah, it's a bit like that, isn't it? I always find those sorts of jobs, you know, you don't think about those when you're at school. Kind of fall into those roles, don't you? But then they become a bit like comfortable slippers. And no, I take my hat off to you, because I know I understand that world very well, that kind of that constant cyclical quarterly thing. Yeah. And it's a hardcore job. So but yeah, I suppose when you're quite experienced in it and you know it like the back of your hand, it's all right. But yeah, no, it's not everyone. And so you mentioned ADHD there. So there we go. Mm-hmm. Look, we're in the same ADHD bus. And so is that a recent diagnosis for you or realization?
Yeah, I mean, it actually came from your podcast when you'd mentioned that you'd been diagnosed yourself. Obviously explained to the listeners that your podcast was the first thing I ever picked up about being sober curious, and I just took to it like a duck to water. And you know, listening to every show, just I could just relate to people, these normal everyday people that I go, oh my God, that's me. I do that too. And all of a sudden I wasn't on my own keeping this dark secret to myself that I was ashamed of anymore. And along the journey, you'd mentioned obviously your diagnosis. And it just then obviously speaking about the people with addictions, you know, it's quite normal for them to have ADHD. My little ears pricked up and I thought, let's look into this. And I did. And thankfully for my partner's private health care, I got assessed very quickly. It probably took all in all probably about 1 month.
Wow.
I was diagnosed last week. So I'm still sort of just trying to digest it and understand it. And obviously being 129 days sober, I'm sort of finding my feet with that and kind of feel like I'm onto a new obstacle now of trying to find my feet in another area. But, you know, it's all about self-awareness for me at the moment and just getting to know myself better and accepting maybe some things why the way they were wasn't me. It was part of this as such, without it sounding like an excuse.
No, it's funny that, isn't it? Because I you know, heard that a bit in the beginning, like it's not an excuse, and I felt shame about that as well, like, oh God, now I've realized I can put this ADHD coat on, and for me it's ADHD and autism now, I can put this coat on, and now I'm feeling shame for doing that because other people were projecting their, you know, everyone's getting diagnosed now or whatever it is that's coming up. But then I realized, well, but actually it's not an excuse, but it is a reason, you know, it is an explanation. So I learned that that's good enough for me. And actually, that's really new for you to have that diagnosis a week ago. I didn't realize that was so soon. And it'll be interesting what your journey is like. And I'm sure we'll stay in touch now after this anyway. But I found that whole process very, like, it fit like a glove, but it was also very alien. It was a really weird place to be. And then when I started to look back over my life and how I saw then through the ADHD lens, I just thought, oh my goodness, I felt sad about that. You know, I felt sort of grief about, and I felt like, oh, I felt very proud of myself as well. So it's kind of a really weird melting pot of emotions that I think follow a diagnosis. But congratulations on getting your diagnosis.
No, thank you. I think just adding on to that as well, I mean, the few people I have told, the closest people to me, not that it's been made a joke, but it's kind of people sort of, oh yeah, you know, knew that anyway. And I feel it's, you know, something that's a bit more maybe trivial to other people, or, you know, sort of just passed off. And for me, you know, even listening to yourself with what you've said about yours and discovering yourself again, there's a lot of importance in that. And that's something that I will, you know, remind myself and not just trivialize it. And like I say, it's not about being medicated whilst I'm not. That might be for some people, having had addictions, it scares me, the thought of having a tablet, which the clinician always said to me, oh, we have a short dosage at the moment in the UK, so you want to give me something that you might not have next week. And that I have a fear with, but I'm not saying I wouldn't go down that route, but I'll certainly do everything else before that. Just to see and understand me, and just like I say, just better awareness of who I am and how I can help myself.
Yeah, I think that's lovely. And isn't it interesting that I just love how everything is so connected there? You know, had you not thought about stopping drinking and then, you know, found the show and listened to the stories and heard me talking about ADHD, like, just, yeah, it's crazy, isn't it? It's like sliding doors moments sometimes.
I never thought of it, but yeah, you're right. It did sort of exactly that.
Yeah, so weird, but lovely, really lovely. I was super excited to understand about how you're even here, you know, today, and the story is. So let's go back to the beginning. And why don't you tell me about what your relationship with alcohol looked like?
Oh, wow.
Good question.
I would say it was messy, disorganized, chaotic. Probably, again, that relates to a bit of ADHD in itself, to be honest with you. I would say growing up as a teenager, I was more of a smoker than I was a drinker. So, you know, I'd smoke weed and was probably more of a chronic smoker, shall we say, for many, many years. I might have drunk at the age of, you know, as other people have. I've tried it when I was younger, gone to the park and those types of things. But I never really got completely drunk. I never had a parent come and pick me up. You know, I was on the floor and as other other friends might have been picked up from the park. That wasn't me. But even in my, you know, sort of 18 to 20 odd, again, I was just a normal, shall we say, I hate the word, but a normal drinker. Yeah. I could leave a drink. I wasn't bothered about it. You know, I wasn't sort of thinking it was the last drink I'd ever have in my life and keep going. Mm. I got to the age of about 25 and my director pushed me into a role I didn't want to do. I was more account management before and he pushed me into sales, working with architects and designers. And that's when I thought to myself, well, this would be a good opportunity to not smoke as much and not be in haze. And I'll take up drinking because that's what you do in sales. And you take out clients and you drink at lunchtime with your friends and so on. So that was kind of the moment where I realised that was probably the starting point where the seed was planted. And I would say, like most people, although it's not for everyone, it was a kind of a slow burner from there, but you don't really realise as it's going along, you're sort of getting worse and worse. And I would say by the age of probably about 30, so 5 years into, you know, sort of getting into drinking more than smoking. By the way, I never actually stopped smoking, so the plan to stop smoking didn't actually work. I just started doing them together.
Yeah.
So I realized by about the age of 30, I knew that, you know, I was probably drinking too much, you know, 3-4 times a week. And I always had this rule that if you didn't drink on a Sunday, well, you were okay. You know, as long as you didn't drink on a Sunday, you got Monday back at work, you were right. Well, that went totally out the window. And before I knew it, you know, I'm drinking every day. Mm. You know, I've how can I put it? I knew I had a problem, but I didn't really care at the time. I just carried on. And I think it stems a lot from I've always masked my emotions. I've always dealt with things. As someone who came out as gay when I was probably about 20, I kept a secret for a long time, which can eat you up. And it's not a very nice thing to have to pretend someone you're not. Obviously, these days, it's a lot different coming out. And thank God kids can come out when they're 13, 14. How amazing. Back in the 90s, you couldn't do that.
No.
And I didn't accept it myself for a long time. But having been to therapy and things like that and being on a long journey, you know, I did come to accept it. But along with that, I've adopted problems with addictions, trying to deal with my emotions and also stop my busy brain, which I now obviously understand why my brain is so busy. And I realized as well with all of that, what I've actually done was with the drinking, I got to a point where I was drinking every day. You know, my partner would come home from work and I'm having a party and it's a Monday and I'm blasting the music, dancing in the kitchen on my own, like. And I knew it wasn't right. I didn't care. And I was so far in by that point. You know, the whole thing where you're like, I'm not going to drink tomorrow. You wake up, you feel like shit. And you're like, I'm not going to drink. And then I see myself, my body's taking me to the shop after work, you know, or on the way home. And I'm it's just like automatic. You're just buying bottles without even thinking, you know, and going to two different shops on the same night so they don't see you, but, you know, both shops don't see you. Done all of those things. Hid bottles upstairs in the ensuite. You know, my partner saying to me, why is there empty bottles in the ensuite? And I'm like, oh. Even when the bin was emptied, I'd hate the bin man coming round, all hearing all that clattering coming out of my recycling bin. But, you know, it got very dark is what I'm trying to say. And unfortunately, what I'd ended up doing was swapping one secret for another and became very secretive. And, you know, I'd wake up and think, well, when can I have a drink? And I never thought I'd get to that point in my life where I'm like, okay, it's 12 o'clock, I can have a drink now. But once I started, I wouldn't stop. And that's the scariest thing for me is that, I would go until I'd have dinner, I'd keep going. And bless my other half, he'd cook a lovely meal and I'd be like, oh, just hold on, just turn it down a little bit, you know, before you know it, you're eating burnt dinner because I wanted to carry on drinking as long as possible. And it was just ruining me, to be honest with you. And I knew I was just absolutely suffocating and everything was being affected, my relationships, my work, you know. You don't realise things like your, you know, temper or frustrations that you have. I just couldn't deal with life, to be honest with you. And obviously that got exasperated in the pandemic. But for me, it was like, oh, well, everyone's doing what I do now, because I was already in it.
Yeah.
But there was no, you know, no excuse and no worries, no one telling me I couldn't do it. And it just carried on. And I got to a point where I just realised that I was even going to kill myself, to be honest with you, if I carried on the way I was. I knew as much as that. And I wasn't happy anymore with my smoking, with my drinking. I just didn't like who I was, you know. And I felt like my whole character was now being defined as drunk Gareth, you know. I've noticed friends pass and comments, you know, when you'd see them. I'd meet people, but I'd already had a few drinks. So I was that person turning up half pissed. And once you get to that point as well, it's really hard to hide. And I found that because of the amount I was drinking, it actually took less sometimes to start slurring and my words to go, you know. And I was constantly on guard of, do they know? Do they know? You know what I mean?
It's, I do, yeah.
Like I say, it was just like swapping one secret for another, and I just couldn't carry on like that anymore.
No. Oh, it's a lot, isn't it? You know, it's... I wrote here, when you were explaining that, I put, just trying to feel good. And I really genuinely think that, like, when I look back over my own drinking and the mistakes that I've made. And by the way, I became a really avid weed smoker as well. I mean, it kind of blows my mind, to be honest. I think my early 20s. And, you know, that all of those sorts of things, they just become like such big crutches in your life. It's like you can't operate without smoking or the drinking or something else. There's always got to be something else, because life just on its own is...
mundane.
It's too frightening, or it's too hard, like it's too difficult. And I do really think that, you know, when you look back over those times, certainly for me, and I try to sort of process them, I can see that I'm just constantly just trying to feel good, trying to feel better, you know.
Well, all my dopamine hits were coming from alcohol. I didn't ever anything. If you'd have said to me, oh, let's go to this child's birthday party, it's your godchild or something, I'd have been like, oh, is there going to be an alcohol? Because all of a sudden, everything just revolved around alcohol.
Yes.
Whatever I'd done, wherever I went, you know, and for somebody who likes going out and hiking and things like this, it was just all robbed from me with alcohol. And until I started doing research and understanding I'm not the problem alcohol is, the work couldn't begin.
No. That's the thing. And I think for you, you definitely have that extra kind of layer of complexity. Okay, there's the ADHD, but I think having to carry that secret as well about your sexuality and just not feeling like you could be you for so long, that is trauma, really. That's quite traumatizing for you.
Yeah, for sure.
Person and the ADHD creates trauma as well, you know, when you kind of look back and process it. And it's always like now I feel like it's so nice that you know, sobriety has just opened a gateway, really, in order for you to be able to step into, you know, having the opportunity of who you really are and learning how to be that person for the first
time. And obviously smoking for so long as well. I mean, my sister said this to me the other day, that when her and my mum were talking about it, the thing is I was in a daze for so many years, smoking for 15, 20 years, that, and I mean every day, you know, wake and bake, if you understand that, sort of get up and have, you know, have a toothy. And, you know, those sort of things made me realise, gosh, I was just totally like numbing myself and just in a haze for so long, you know. And it's no way to live your life.
Weed is a weird one, isn't it, right? Because it's like, when I look back over, I mean, I was literally, I would smoke a joint or whatever, and I would just like almost... I'd just be coma. I'd pass out almost. And then it got giggly, or the amount of times I just would watch films and I just would just fall asleep. I just wouldn't. It was almost like literally just pressing the button off. That's what it was like for me. And I felt like I did that for a period of time, quite a few years. I just did that like over and over and over every day. Everywhere I went, I'd go camping, I'd just be getting stoned. Like just everything would just be constantly stoned. And if I wasn't stoned, I'd be drinking or drunk. And it's like... you're just literally like, you're just not living life at all.
I mean, like with alcohol shutting the prefrontal cortex down, I mean, I don't quite know the neuroscience behind it with the weed, because I've not looked into it so much obsessively as I have with alcohol, but it kind of has the same effect where it just sort of takes everything out of your mind. It just numbs you, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, just going back onto, I never knew what blackouts were, you know, and I was having them and I didn't even know what was going on. And bless my other half, he'd be like, he was so sweet and he always has been about it. And he'd say to me, do you remember what you had for dinner last night? You know, and that was his way of saying, I think you blacked out. Mm. And he was just so lovely the whole time and, you know, never judged me or anything. You know, even if I flipped out and was a complete git, he was always there, you know, and thank God he was and helped me through that, because he put up with a lot of crap, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
You know, I was,
yeah, we're lucky, aren't we? Sometimes I think when we stop and look around and we think we see these people around us, you know, not always, some people aren't very useful when you get sober, but there are those people there that that aren't judging us. And my husband was the same. He never really said mm-hmm. anything about my drinking, although I maybe don't have as much time. It wasn't so impactful, I think, because I stopped sure. drinking a year and a half after we got together, so it wasn't a huge amount of time.
You were wise.
Yeah, that's right. But I in my last relationship, you know, that, you know, the alcohol was certainly was a problem, you know, for sure. But so what, you know, what made you actually just wake up and say, that's it? Like, what was that? You know,
I think like most people, you build up to it. It doesn't happen overnight. It can be months, it can be years. It's certainly probably been, I would say, maybe a 3-year, excuse me. It's been about a 3-year process for me, I would say. And I think when you get to that point when you're not enjoying yourself anymore and the bads outweighing the good, you're already on that journey, even if you've not dipped into any sort of sober curious material, that there's something not right anymore. And I had that with smoking and with drinking, and I just didn't enjoy them anymore, which can even affect your buzz with drinking. I was totally drinking for the wrong reasons, and you know, I wasn't happy, and I was just waking up every day feeling like absolute crap. But I got normal, that became normal, you know. There'd be some sessions where I'd wake up and be like, I feel really awful, but my God, I wouldn't tell anyone. You know, my other half said, you're right, yeah, I'm fine. And I would literally just white knuckle it through the day and I felt like crap. Mm. But you didn't want to admit it to anyone, because if you admit it, then you can't have a drink that night.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Why are you going to have a drink if you don't feel good?
Yes.
You know, so it's these constant secrets, these, you know, these constant, just on your own. You can't, you become such a secretive person when you go down this route. And it just became so super dark for me. And I just felt so lonely surrounded by people and just felt like I couldn't get on in my life. You know, like you say, we're talking about jobs. You know, I'd like to go into other careers. And I'm like, how can I ever do this if I'm pissed all the time?
Mm.
You know, how can I focus on anything? Because as soon as you open a bottle, the day's gone. That's it. You know, time flies, you've got nothing else done, and that's it for the day.
Mm.
So I just started becoming a bit curious. And the first thing I'd done was I went on an app called Reframe. You've probably heard of Reframe before. Yeah. And I'd signed up to it for their 30-day trial. And it wasn't the thing that really helped, but it was a starting point for me. Found it a bit overwhelming at first with all the information, because I didn't really want to know all that bad information about all the carcinogens and, you know, all these different things, not even just carcinogens, that alcohol does to your body. I didn't want to know it, you know. Like we all know, the way it's been marketed, it's just this fantastic thing that,
yeah.
you know, isn't a drug and we can all enjoy it. It's okay, it's legal, go and buy some more.
Yes.
And then someone mentioned podcasts, so I just started looking on Spotify, and that's when you popped up, as most people say on this, you know. And like I said before, the first one I listened to, it just resonated, and straight away I didn't feel alone anymore.
Oh.
I'd be walking my dogs and I'd be going around the fields, and I just was literally just obsessed with listening to more material. And I joined the party quite late, so you already had quite a few. So I listened to yours to begin with and was like, wow. And every time I listened, not that anyone was better than you, but it just got better and better, because I could take so much, not even just one or two things, so much from every single session.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just, all of a sudden, like, okay, I can do this. There was so much reinforcement there, so much, as you'd say, there was so much material to put in my evidence cup that I realized that, oh my God, you know, this isn't out of my reach.
Yeah.
So I started by last year, I actually done 33 days and that was huge for me.
Yeah.
Massive.
Wow.
But I had no plan, you know, so I didn't white knuckle through it and I actually enjoyed it. And every day was like sunshine and lollipops. I was having a great time. Every day that passed, I was super proud and I was just going through life realizing, okay, I don't have to have a hangover and I can feel good. And, you know, it was just all falling into place, but there was no plan about what, when or how or where I go from here. And after 33 days, I was like, oh, sod it, go on, I'll have a drink. And as we know, what happens when you go back, you hit it harder.
Yeah.
And God knows whether it'll be weeks, months or years before you realise that you made the wrong decision and you need to go back. So this year, I knew at some point I just had to stop and I kept having the blowouts. And my problem is that if I have a drink, then it's like I'm going to have a drink the next day. And the next day, before I know it, it's been 14 days and I've been drinking every day, you know, and I can still function, you know, if there's such a thing, functioning alcoholic, whatever you want to call it. I hate the word alcoholic, by the way, but I was functioning, but I wasn't functioning brilliantly. I would make mistakes. I would lose my rag, you know, and weren't really handling life, but I was still getting through it. And I knew this year at some point that had to change. And I went to Gay Pride in London with my other half and a friend and had a bender all day, went back to my friends, carried on the bender. And I got home and my boyfriend had already gone home by that point to look after the dogs. And I went back later and I had my last beer and I was like, this is going to be my last one now. And I just need to just do this for me. So that was June the 30th. And yeah, that was it. I mean, I think once you have that in your head, you know, you might fall off, but you have to be kind to yourself and be like, it's okay, I'm going to get back up and I'm going to do this. And I've learned that rather than sabotaging myself or telling myself I can't do something, I've not only got to be nice to myself and say it's okay if I do fall over, but I've got to learn to find a way to enjoy this and it to work for me. I've got to find new things and like I say, be happy as I'm doing it. And that's pretty much what I've done this time. I had all the material already. I've read books, you know, Annie Grace's book changed my life.
Yeah,
that was a game changer for me. I mean, wow, between your podcast and her book, then all of a sudden my ADHD kicked in and I was all in and I'm reading books left, right and centre, listening to podcasts, the lot.
Yeah.
And I just kept building up that evidence cup and reinforcing again and again and again all of these things. And I've just kept going at it. But I must say, a part of the reason why I wanted to come on your show was because I'm not sure where I'm at still at the moment. I'm still in that area of, will I drink again? Will I won't? You know, even at the 100 days, I was like, well, what am I going to do? And we actually went out on day 97 and met friends in Watford. And I'd asked for a 0% Peroni. And the guy gave me a beer. But he actually gave me a beer and I didn't realise and took a sip. And I was like, oh, my God, you've just broken it. I actually had a go at the bartender, told him you need to actually listen to people. I should have looked at the label. Yeah. And then I had this decision to make and it was, well, do I just give up now? Or do I say, well, that doesn't really count. And I didn't know. Mm. But as soon as I put my lips and tasted it, I could tell the difference between a 0% Peroni and alcohol Peroni. And I must tell you, the 0% tastes much bloody better.
Yeah.
But going back to it, I sat there and I just said to myself, no, you're not taking this away from me. And it actually then gave me a plan. And I looked at that situation as a gift because I didn't know what I was going to do after day 100 and where I was going to go. But I had my answer in that moment where I was like, no, you need to carry this on.
Oh, that's so cool.
You know, and I'm still in that place where I'm like, is this forever? I don't know. The thing is, I love what I see around me in the sober community. People, you don't have anyone turn around and say, oh, I wish I was still drinking, you know.
Yeah.
Life's
yeah.
much worse.
Yeah.
But I'm still at that point, as people say on the show, where the switch hasn't quite flicked yet.
Yeah.
So
And I also think that that can be very normal as well. When I'm coaching clients in this situation, I will say, it is amazing that you've got 129 days, right? It is awesome. But it is also only 129 days, you know? Like, when you think of the timeline of how long you've been caning it or going hard with other substances or whatever, and then you look at the timeline of how long that is and the timeline of where you are with your not drinking, you know, those two amounts of time are hugely different. The brilliant thing about it is that it doesn't take that time again to undo all that work. You know, it's not going to take you 25 years to kind of undo it. But I think sometimes we get a little bit anxious about the forever thing, right? And I say to people, just put the forever questions in the box and put it on the shelf. Mm-hmm. Don't worry about it, you know?
Yeah.
Because when people go into, you know, it's like joining a gym. You don't join and sign up to a gym forever, do you? Like, you just sign up for a gym, like, for now. Because, you know, you want to get fit, you want to get healthy, you want to, you know, do whatever. But so I think sometimes the mind can be a bit tricky like that, in that it can throw up these quite big questions like, but is this forever? And, you know, that's not important. That question's not important. The important question I would ask is, how long do I want to feel good for?
Mm-hmm.
And kind of flip it a little bit on its head, because you mentioned the evidence cup, and I love that the evidence cup is so out there and that people really talk about that. I'm a very visual person, and I need visual to sort of work with. So for you, you've filled your cup, right? But you're going to keep filling that cup up. And the more that you fill that cup up, it's kind of like self-fulfilling prophecy. The better you're going to feel, the more confidence you're going to feel, and the more reassured that you're doing the right thing is going to come out from that. And then when you start to get that cup get so full that it's overflowing, I don't think when you're in that place, in that zone, and you feel very emotionally sober, because that's what a lot of it does come down to, is can you cope with life on life's term without having to rely and go back to alcohol to pull you through things, or, you know, or get caught up in, well, it's such and such as a wedding and everyone's getting shit faced and I'm going to be missing out. Yeah. Once you get past all of that and you realize that you're not missing out by not drinking, you're always gaining by not drinking, that's the point when I think you just think, I don't need it anyway. Whether it just becomes a non-issue. Does that make sense? It just becomes something.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, like when people talk about social lubricant, I mean, I'm a very social, outgoing person. I have people ask me all the time when I'm out, because I haven't stopped going out at all. I didn't at the beginning, just to give myself a break, but you know, I've had so many social events. And even, you know, work parties in France where the champagne's flowing, and the French do not understand when you say you're not drinking. They just can't comprehend it. But, you know, people even ask me, have you had a drink? Because, you know, you're there laughing away, having a great time. And no, I haven't. I'm just me. I'm just being sober. Although I went to a Halloween party at the weekend, and it was the first time I felt, I hate the word, but boring. You know, there's my other half dressed as a unicorn, an inflatable unicorn, wanting to stay at the party. And I've been there 3 hours and I'm done. I've got to drive home from Watford to Berkshire. And, you know, I did feel like a bit of a party pooper. And I felt, I even messaged my friend afterwards the next day saying, look, really nice party. Sorry if I was a bit boring. And she's like, you can never be boring. It was the first time I'd felt a little bit, you know, of that. Oh, God, I do feel even more. I've always felt different since starting this, but it was like a negative feeling different for the first time. Every other time I relish in it when I leave, and I go and have a bit of cake and a tea when I get home, and I'm back reading my books, my happy places, and the way I get my dopamine hits has totally changed. But it was the first time where I was a bit like, oh, I questioned, am I boring? I asked my other half yesterday at dinner, I was like, I'm not boring, am I? Like, since, you know, and he's like, no, you're not boring. He's like, and what I'm really happy with is you haven't got all the things that used to happen when you were drunk don't happen anymore.
Yeah.
And it just really warmed my heart, you know, and I really wasn't sure what he was going to say. You know, when you ask a question and you're like, oh God, do I want the answer?
But yeah, please say the right thing.
It was playing on my mind, you know, but I'll take that. If people want to think I'm a bit boring, I'd rather take that than have a blackout and have someone say to me, do you know what you did last night? And you just literally want the world to just open up because you don't want to hear what you've done.
Exactly. And I also think as well, like, the reality is, right, you can't party forever. I'm sorry.
No.
Don't care how hardcore people are in life. At some point, that partying has to stop, right?
For sure.
And no one likes to see a 50-year-old coked up in a party, right? That's
absolutely
not a good look. That's not a good look. So, actually, I think it's really funny, this whole, like, am I boring, so I want to go home. 3 hours at a party, when you've got to drive a really long way, that is a full night out, right? And actually, it's a bit like, I never go to the pub now, bearing in mind I spent all my life in bars and, you know, just getting wrecked in, you know, wherever. I literally never go in one now. I never go in one. At first, I obviously felt the same. I think we all go through this discomfort of, oh my God, I'm changing. I'm not going to be the person I've always been. And that feels really weird. And I'm just going to look really rubbish for it. And then I think what happens is, and you get your feet under the sobriety table, you get a bit more comfortable, you lean back, you get a blanket, and you think, I don't fucking care. Actually, I don't care how I look, because I'm sorry, but standing in the cold outside, I don't care how many fairy lights your pub's got, that's boring. I want to be at home with my lovely tea, with my cat, with my husband, in my warm, lovely house, watching my favourite content or reading a book or lying on a shakti mat or doing whatever. Like, there are just...
Girl after my own heart.
So it's almost like, why is it that because we're not standing in a pub for 4 hours, why is it we're boring? Like, that is a boring activity. I'm sorry. Like, I don't know if you noticed this, you probably did, but when you're not drinking and you're in those situations, you can literally only have like 2 lemonades max or 2 Cokes because you just can't keep filling your body up with all this fluid like you can.
No, why doesn't anywhere sell kombucha? I'm so into kombucha at the moment, and no one sells it.
Yeah, I like kombucha as well. But yeah, I think that I would say that is like, that is a normal part of the kind of the sort of, it's a little bit like for you, you've got it double time as well. And what I mean by that is, when I got sober, I had this like what felt like this period of unmasking because I was sort of like learning who I really was. And I was always very flamboyant in parties, whereas now I'm a little bit more, I get social anxiety when I go places that I don't know now. I'm like, oh, I don't really want to go in and make small talk. Right? You know, I'm a different person now, but it took time to pull those layers back. And then for me, like 5 years later, I then found out I was ADHD. And so it was like, oh, got to do this process all again. I'm like, more unmasking. Whereas you've got like the double unmasking right now, all in one hit. You're trying to learn who you are without alcohol, but you're also equally trying to learn who you are as an ADHD-er.
Sure.
And so there's a lot of kind of, I think from when I look back to when I was in your place, if I was dealing with both things, it's just so much of it has to be instinct driven in a way. You know, actually what makes you feel good and you know what you want. And it's just learning to tune into that and learning to be okay with that externally and not caring so much what everyone else thinks. Because at the end of the day, the people that love you are going to love you anyway. And the people that are, you know, like saying, oh, you're being so bored, well, they're just obviously got their own issues of drinking and they're just projecting that onto you, you know, because they want you drinking with them to make them feel better. So I think you start to separate that a little bit, like as you kind of keep walking into the journey. But you know, you're 129 days, and it's really exciting actually, because I always think that you do get that little bit of a big shift around the 100 days, and it can be a time of uncertainty, like, well, I've done 100 days now, not like, now what? You feel good, but you don't feel amazing, and there's a lot of, a lot of people can have wobbles around that kind of 100-day mark. But then I think the next biggie tends to be around that, like, 6 months mark, where you have that next kind of shift or group of shifts. And, you know, you're not far from that now. Like, you're coming up to that soon. And then, you know, for me, I felt that kind of shift again about 8 months. And then obviously when you get to the year, it blows your mind when you get to a year. It's like, oh, my God, how have I done a year sober? This is mind-blowing. And the energy that you're in and the way that you feel today is going to be so different at all of those different points. So it's almost like it's good, I think, to just all of those like concerns and anxieties about the future stuff, just keep pushing them a little bit further forward. out the way. Yeah. Just push Absolutely. Them down the road. Don't worry about them now. And keep dealing with the fact that you feel really good today and that you've achieved something.
Well, like you said before, I mean, you know, I play it forward in my mind as, well, how will tomorrow look? And I think that's always a really important thing to do. And I'm like, well, should I have a drink then? And I play it forward and I'm like, God, that's how tomorrow will look. Absolutely not.
Yeah.
And I just list the whys and I realise, gosh, there's so much more like to be said for being sober. And the positive changes I've had this year, it's immense. You know, I've pretty much become vegetarian. I'm back to swimming. I'm cycling. I'm like devouring a book in a couple of days. That had taken me 2 months before. Wow. Doing all these things, thinking about a new career, all sorts of things. And I wouldn't have done any of that before.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And that's what I have to remind myself each time. And, you know, and also the problem with me is that I wouldn't just have one drink. And that always stops me in itself. I'm like, well, one would never be enough.
Yeah, exactly. I was exactly the same. Totally no off switch. But I think as well, it's kind of challenging. It's always coming back to that basic, what am I really gaining by having alcohol? Do you know what I mean? It's like, what is it actually really giving me? And what is it giving me that I can't give myself? You know, and I think that's probably what, for you, you know, you're in that place, you know, with the evidence cup and all, doing all these new things, you're showing yourself, oh my God, like, I can actually really have a great time without drinking. I can achieve a lot. And so, you know, that is kind of building that sober muscle, isn't it? That like muscle memory. And I think the nice thing about it is the further that you do go, and obviously Christmas is around the corner, and of course these things can be a little bit like, oh, how do we get through Christmas? But equally, it is a brilliant opportunity. I mean, imagine doing Christmas sober and having New Year sober and doing all these things that you love, but doing them even more, and then really, really enjoying all of those different moments. So long as you've got your boundaries in place and you keep checking in with that more people-pleasing side that we can sometimes kind of lean on a bit, you know, because we feel afraid to show up as who we are because we worry that people won't like it. But the more that we just push ourselves out of our comfort zone to do that and say, look, 3 hours is enough, quite frankly, for me, it'll be 2 hours, see you later. But 3 hours is enough, go home and get a cup of tea. Then there's no reason why you can't have the most magical Christmas that you've ever had, you know, a new
year. I mean, it's funny, I'm actually looking forward to Christmas. And you know, apart from what I explained at Halloween, I go to parties really excited being different now. I've never minded being different, never minded being a leader. And for me, you know, the conversations I have with people now, most people are really positive about it. You get the odd idiot that goes, oh, well, why are you doing that for? And I actually feel quite sorry for them because they really don't have the knowledge I have. But I'm not there to patronise them or educate them. Mm-hmm. I'm in the know. And, you know, I like being different. I've always been different, whether it was, you know, being gay or this or that. I've always had something about me. I've always felt different. Yeah. So this is just another layer. And I love going to places and still being sober. And everyone's had 3 drinks. And I'm looking at the state of them. I go to the toilet. Oh, I've got Botox. But I look amazing. Do you know what I mean? You're good. I look how I looked when I arrived, you know, and people are chatting crap and, you know, it's repetition and I look at it now and I just feel like a bit of a, you know, like I've got my own show going and I'm watching everything just unravel around me and it's just hilarious. And for that reason, I'm loving Christmas, looking forward to Christmas because to be present, you know, to be there in the moment. I can't wait for that. It's something that I'm really excited for because normally it's just about, right, let's get pissed.
Let's just get on it.
I don't need to do that.
Yeah.
So I can enjoy the food. I can enjoy the music. I can enjoy the conversations.
Yeah, you can enjoy the crap telly and just all the bits and bobs that come with it.
All the little things all of a sudden become so big and they give you that buzz. They give you that dopamine hit, the endorphins flow. And I love that now. And I would not want to change that. I don't need a quick automatic fake high that takes me up here and takes me lower than I started afterwards. It just doesn't work for me anymore.
That's not your vibe. I think, well, you know, the attitude, your attitude around it and your intention is amazing. And I think if you can find excitement for the journey, like I really believe that. I always say, like, if you can fall in love with the process,
Yes.
Kind of getting sober,
you wholeheartedly agree.
More than halfway there. Like, because if you make it enjoyable, so for you, I always really like you. Maybe this is an ADHD thing, hyper-focus and all that jazz. But I just devoured podcasts, you know? There wasn't even a minute in my day where I wasn't listening to something. It's still the same now, to be honest. It just shifts around depending on what I'm struggling with in life. But I just devoured it because I love learning. I love learning and I love stories. And I love to learn through other people's experiences. I really with that. And so I grew a passion for that, you know, learning in books or, you know, like you reading a book in 2 days. And I'd never really done that before. And then I felt really proud of myself. Like, oh my God, I can do all this stuff. I can listen. I can absorb all this information. And
stop believing in yourself again, don't you?
Exactly. I think it becomes a positive new hobby or hyperfixation or whatever want to call it. But then you realise you haven't got time to drink, actually, because...
I know, where does time go all of a sudden? You're like, how did I ever have all that time?
I know, it's mind-blowing, isn't it? To think that, I mean, I was sort of more of a 4 nights a week, maybe 5, mm-hmm. 4 to 5 nights a week drinker, which always tried to have 2 or 3 nights off, you know, to prove that I didn't have a problem. But what the hell was I doing? Like, how did I even fit life in drinking that much? You know, because now... I just don't have that time. I don't know,
I'm sitting in a pub. I went and met a friend in Windsor who lives up in Chesterfield, and we sat in a pub for 5 hours, and I love her to bits, but I didn't have the heart to say, this isn't really the sort of thing I want to do anymore. I hope she doesn't listen to this. But sitting in a pub for 5 hours is not for me anymore. Let's go for a walk by the river. Let's go and have a look in the castle. Or
have a nice coffee. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I want to be out doing something now. And like you, learning has just become an obsession for me. And I think I love learning more now than any part of my life.
Oh, same. And I think a lot of that as well comes down to neurodivergence, because I think we are kind of in the school framework, one size fits all, we're kind of pushed into it. It's not really designed for neurodivergent people. Right.
No.
It's not really designed for all neurotypical people, but yet there is this one size fits all. And then I think we go through, we sort of like, you know, if you think about it, when you're a child, you're forced through this school day and all these lessons and breaks and structure, homework, exam. We have to do learning, which is extrinsically linked. You know, it's motivated externally. It's not internal 100%. Motivation. So. Actually,
something that interests you.
Yeah, exactly. I've never been great I wasn't brilliant at school, really, and I'm not very good at learning things that I'm forced to. I'm really bad at it.
But
give me something I'm interested in. I mean, I'm learning at the moment about my one of my daughters is autistic PDA, it's pathological demand avoidance. It's a very niche thing. I could do a degree in this, right, and I would pass with an A, I'm telling you now, because I have done so much research and depth, because I'm so interested in it. And it's like, my brain is amazing when it wants to learn something, and I've learned that about myself, which has been a confidence boost, because, you know,
same to me. If it's important to you for whatever reason that will be, then I'm the same. I'm like a sponge, and I'll just totally absorb it. But if you try and put me in a room to learn something I have no interest in whatsoever, then I'm going to struggle.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, I think as we were growing up, we would have been quite shamed for that, because that's the way society is. And, you know, I was labelled as disruptive. And, you know, God, if she could only apply herself, you know, she would go so far. And just all that, you know, stuff, all that messaging. But actually, I mean... And that stuff that links back to that trauma, I do think that creates, when you have a lot of that messaging, I do think that a lot of people that are realizing their ADHD, they do have a lot of people pleasing tendencies, because they've grown up, you know, feeling different, not quite right, not quite fitting in, not learning quite well enough, not listening well enough. You know, there's that statistic, isn't there? I don't know if you've stumbled on it yet, but it's something like when a child, I can't remember the age, so I'm probably going to butcher this, so forgive me, but when a child gets to like 18 or something like that, they've had 20,000 more criticisms than a neurotypical drive.
I heard you say that in a podcast recently.
I should
actually
really get this right, shouldn't I? Because I slowed the
time. No, you said that's how you said it last time. So you've got it wrong twice.
Okay, so I need to cross that bit of knowledge for, don't I? But, you know, I can relate to that, and you probably can relate.
Yeah, big time.
And I do think that, and that's why I realise now that there is that very big link with neurodivergence and alcohol or smoking or, you know, whatever. But because
and it sets you up for self-sabotage as well, doesn't it? With people constantly on your case as you're growing up, and you know, you then tell yourself you can't do things yourself, you know. You just go around in circles. And I think what broke that circle for me was actually removing, obviously I removed the weed as well before I even removed the alcohol this year. So it's been a big year for me in terms of removing things like that. And it's just such an eye opener all of a sudden. You're like, okay, right. If I'm going to do something now, 9 times out of 10, I will do it as long as I'm interested in it.
Yes. and that's the thing, isn't it? You've got to be interested. And I think that's what's so nice about actually coming to this conclusion. And for you, you've got a diagnosis. You can start to understand the computer software in your brain and you can start to be okay with it. And you can start to say, oh, actually, I probably can't do that because of this reason. Or actually, I'm better at doing that because of this. And you can
fine tune it and be kinder to yourself at the same time.
100%, 100%. And I think that's really important because a lot of people in this community, you know, they are very shame heavy, right?
Yeah.
And the drinking exacerbates that shame so, so massively as well. But I realized I came into all this with big, big rucksack of shame already on my back because of my differences, being ADHD and autistic and not knowing. And then I've just, you know, those have played out through my life, like maybe when I lost jobs or, you know, like other things that haven't fit quite right. And, you know, then the drinking just came in to make me feel better, just trying to feel better about who I am, not understanding my world. And then that came in. But then that further deepened the shame, you know, because I was making...
Well, and it becomes that emotional crutch as well, doesn't it? I mean, even when I emailed you and you emailed back saying, oh, we'd love to have you on the show, the first reaction I had was, I'm going to celebrate tonight and thought about drink. I was like, oh, no, I don't drink.
Yeah.
Because it's just that emotional sort, whatever it's happy, sad, whatever feeling you're feeling,
yes,
the alcohol's always there to comfort you.
Yeah. Have you researched the Pavlov's dogs at all?
No.
Check that out. That basically is the brain conditioning piece. So research that and you'll understand what I mean. But basically that explains brain conditioning and how they discovered brain conditioning through these tests with you know, dogs ringing a bell and them salivating for food. Okay. They got used to doing it, and even when the bell would ring and the food wouldn't come, they would still salivate because they would still expect it. And that's how they discovered, you know, neuroplasticity and brain conditioning, all that stuff. But it's an interesting thing to, you can find high level information on it, but once you realize that, you realize that, okay, as quickly as that, or as much as that conditioning has been kind of embedded, like it was for you and I with learning how to drink and relying on alcohol, it can be undone. And that's
absolutely, it's just tapping into your subconscious more and more and more. You're just chipping away at it because, you know, we don't realize how much evidence we put into our subconsciousness. And it makes you feel like it's a matter of life or death and you need this thing. But the more you learn, as you always say, you can't unlearn it.
Yes.
And that's the thing, is when you do go on this journey, it's, you know, you've got to really want it, because if you don't, sometimes it's really hard to go back because of everything you've learned.
Yeah, no, exactly. You've changed it forever. And, you know, I see that prop up a lot when I talk to people or people in my online community. You know, it's even if people go back to having a drink, it kind of is ruined for them. People don't go back to the way that it was when you've started to go on this journey and learn what you learn.
Because who wants to drink petrol?
Exactly. Who does want to drink petrol? And the really nice thing as well is that, you know, for me now, whenever I have big moments of stress, alcohol is just not there. Like, I never, like, hand on my heart, I can't remember, it was such a long time ago, I can't remember the last time the knee jerk for me was like, oh, wine, It's gone.
Yeah.
It's just gone.
The only emotion I still have, though, although I'm so early into this, I don't think about alcohol. I go out. I don't need to have a drink. The only one is that celebratory, happy still feeling. That's the one that still gets me a little bit. Yeah. But being angry, I wouldn't go, right, I'm going to go and get a six-pack of beers now. That, because I know it won't help me. But yeah. When you're already in a celebratory mood with your friends, that happy vibe, that's still the only one. Like I say, when you said, oh, you can come on the podcast, it's like, oh, my God, I'm going to have a drink. Oh, no, I can't.
Yeah. And I think, I wonder if some of that is just, it's collecting the days, it's time, you know,
yeah.
It's showing, it's having lots of exposure to when you get to celebrate. So Christmas is around the corner, it's the perfect time, and enjoying the celebration without being on the same alcohol level. And then coming
but now I'll just have kombucha. I'll be like, oh, I'll get a couple of kombuchas
and a mince
nice little treat here and there. And you're still having treats.
Yes.
You're not depriving yourself. You're actually giving yourself something back, which is your health.
Yeah,
you know, your sanity.
Yeah, it is. Oh, it's all very positive, and I'm excited for you. I feel like, yeah, just when you realize, you know, it takes me back to where you are now. For me, I say that the wrong way around. Takes me back to when I was in the same place, and when I think back over what this journey's been like, it's of course there are a few rocks that get thrown in the road that you have to, you know, swerve around and avoid. But the majority on the whole is really positive, and it gets better and better. And that is, I do think the first year is about just crunching everything into place and bedding in and flattening down and puffing up. Push it, you know, it's just getting yourself ready. And then year two is like, now I can lie and settle and see, you know. And every year gives a different experience, you know. Every year really does. So leading on to what would be, you know, somebody who is still, you know, a good way in but still early on the journey. So for lots of people listening, this will be really inspirational, really helpful. What would be your top three tips?
My top three tips. That is a good point. So I had loads, but I appreciate, you know, you've got to try and sort of narrow it down a bit. And one was reinforcements, like I kept saying before, just, you know, this is the main reason, like I said, why we came on the show, was to reinforce why I'm doing this, you know, remind myself all the good that's coming from this. So every time I did sort of doubt it, I just need to look in places, the right places, whether it be putting on a podcast or reading a book or whatever. I mean, I'm not on Instagram, and from everything I hear, I probably should be, because there's a great community on there. But just getting those reinforcements, especially when you need them in those moments, because those moments will pass. They really do. They dissolve. They're not there forever. It's a thought, and thoughts dissolve. But, you know, you can help it along its way just by reinforcing and reminding yourself of the good things and all the positives. You know, don't white knuckle it. You know, at the end of the day, it's like we said, try and find ways to enjoy this, because it really can be an enjoyable experience.
Yeah.
And if you are, you know, in that moment of not being sure, just play it forward in your mind of how tomorrow's going to look. That always stopped me in my first 100 days. I was like, well, actually, I'm on day 24. I've done 24 days. And, you know, even a day is fantastic. So to get to 24 days is. And then you're like, well, how am I going to feel tomorrow? What's tomorrow going to look like? Am I going to hate myself? And all of this work I've put in has literally taken all of that bad vibe away, all that bad feeling. You know, I don't have that. So play it forward. Ask yourself if you really want to change, and figure out your whys and remember them. Because for me, you know, it's all about, why am I actually doing this? What am I gaining from this? You know, really sort of, even if you have to put pen to paper, because I can assure you, your reasons for doing it will be a lot longer than the reasons not doing it, you know. And I'm always telling myself my whys. I think it's really, really important. And make sure it's for you and not for anybody else. It's not something you can do because your wife or your partner's telling you, if you don't stop this, I'm going to leave you. Yes, okay, if you have kids, you want to better yourself for them. But you have to do it for you, ultimately. Otherwise, it's never going to work. And finally, I would say something that I've done many times is I think everyone should have therapy. I think untangling your childhood traumas is super important. We can do all of this work, we can do all of this knowledge and research, but if we haven't gone and untangled that part, then it could all be for nothing, because you're not getting really to the roots of the traumas, of the problems, of the reasons why.
Yeah, such good advice, because that stuff keeps showing up, right? You know, that unresolved stuff, it will certainly keep showing up. And I'm a big believer in therapy. I'm in therapy myself at the moment, and I just even like having someone to talk to for once a week. It's just nice.
I think everyone should have therapy. I've had so many people therapy, and I think it does wonders. It should be in the school curriculum, you know. I think everybody needs it. Otherwise you spend years and years going down paths you probably wouldn't have gone down if you just had the opportunity to understand you a little bit better and what you've been through.
100%. And you know, it's such a nice way to wrap up as well, because that links really nicely to what I was saying about you being on this journey. You have given yourself the opportunity to do that now, to understand who you really are, and to like that person, and to appreciate that brilliant person that's got you here, you know.
And take care of yourself, and give yourself the love that you need, and
that you deserve. Accept
that you deserve it, exactly.
Deserve, like, you know. And I think that no one's going to love you like you love you, you know, funnily enough, especially when you spent all those years kind of sabotaging yourself, and as a lot of us have. So it's kind of like you're at the beginning of lots of beautiful things, hopefully, and I hope you feel proud. And I'm very grateful for you coming on my show and sharing.
No, and I'm grateful for you as well about sounding like a fangirl. I mean, you're just doing such an amazing job, and I genuinely wouldn't be where I am if I hadn't pressed play on your session. So if there's anyone listening who's literally listening to their first session, if you've done what I've done, I went to the bottom rather than the top to start, and you're listening to this, keep bloody listening, because honestly, it will change your life.
Oh, makes my heart warm, and it will make me cry in a minute.
On that note.
So you're not on social media, so it's quite difficult to people to reach out to you directly. But what I will offer is, if people want to email any comments to me, you can get me thrive@sassysobermum.com, and I will forward them on to Gareth.
So
he can get to see any of your, you know, comments and things, because look, I think lots of people do like to, you know, check in and say hello or say thank you and that stuff. So hopefully I'll be able to do a good job of stitching that together. But, thank you again. And good luck. Keep in touch. I want to hear
all
good stuff.
Thank you very much. It's been an absolute pleasure.
And thank you to everyone else. Bye. Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. If you're interested in being a guest, please contact me directly on Instagram by sending a message to @sassysobermum. You can also find helpful tools and resources on my website, sassysobermum.com. If you enjoyed the podcast and you want to spread the love, please like, share, and rate the podcast. I really look forward to next time. See you then.